Hello, angels. It is me, Willow, and I am really sick, but when I don't feel well, all I really want to do is read or color or something quiet. So I'm here to read more of A Wrinkle in Time. We are on chapter 8. If you haven't heard the preceding chapters, I strongly suggest you do so. I will have to check my audio indexes after I record this to see if they're up to date. There's a very good chance that they're not, just because I'm lazy until I can't be anymore. So basically, if you haven't heard the ones that come before this, I strongly suggest that you do so. They can be found in the aforementioned Safe Work audio index on my Reddit profile, which should be pinned to the top and really easy to find. They are also pinned in my media channel on Discord. And they are on my Twitter if you're feeling incredibly brave and you feel like scrolling through a shit ton of content, because I post on Twitter a lot. So, you're gonna have to mind the background noise. I have my fan on. I am very warm. I'm feverish, and I would rather have background noise than be sweaty. And I think that's my right. But, without further ado, we are on to chapter 8 of Madeline L'Engle's A Wrinkle in Time. The chapter is called The Transparent Column. Charles Wallace sat there, tucking away at turkey and dressing as though it were the most delicious thing he'd ever tasted. He was dressed like Charles Wallace. He looked like Charles Wallace. He had the same sandy brown hair, the same face that had not yet lost its baby roundness. Only the eyes were different, for the black was still swallowed up in the blue. But it was far more than that that made Meg feel that Charles Wallace was gone, that the little boy in his place was only a copy of Charles Wallace, only a doll. She fought down a sob. "Where is he?" she demanded of the man with the red eyes. "What have you done with him? Where's Charles Wallace?" "But my dear child, you're hysterical," the man thought at her. "He's right there, before you, well and happy. Completely well and happy for the first time in his life. And he's finishing his dinner, which you also would be wise to do." "You know it isn't Charles," Meg shouted. "You've got him somehow." "Hush, Meg. There's no use in trying to talk to him," Calvin said, speaking in a low voice into her ear. "What we have to do is hold Charles Wallace tight. He's there, somewhere, underneath, and we mustn't let them take him away from us. Help me hold him, Meg. Don't lose control of yourself. Not now. You've got to help me hold Charles." He took the little boy firmly by one arm. Fighting down her hysteria, Meg took Charles's other arm and held it tightly. "You're hurting me, Meg," Charles said sharply. "Let me go." "No," Meg said grimly. "We've been all wrong," Charles Wallace's voice, Meg thought, might have been a recording. There was a canned quality to it. "He isn't the enemy at all. He's our friend."
"Nuts," Calvin said rudely.
"You don't understand, Calvin," Charles Wallace said. "Mrs. What's-It, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Which have confused us. They're the ones who are really our enemies. We never should have trusted them for a minute." He spoke in his calmest, most reasonable voice, the voice which infuriated the twins. He seemed to be looking directly at Calvin as he spoke, and yet Meg was sure that the bland blue eyes would not see, and that someone, something else, was looking at Calvin through Charles. Now the cold, strange eyes turned to her. "Meg, let's go." "Oh, let go. I will explain it all to you, but you must let go."
"No."
Meg gritted her teeth. She did not release her grip, and Charles Wallace began to pull away with power that was not his own, and her own spindly strength was no match against it. "Calvin!" she gasped as Charles Wallace wrenched his arm from hers and stood up. Calvin, the athlete. Calvin, the boy who split firewood and brought it in for his mother, whose muscles were strong and controlled, let go of Charles Wallace's wrist and tackled him as though he were a football. Meg, in her panic and rage, darted at the man in the chair, intending to hit him as Charles Wallace had done, but the black-smocked men were too quick for her, and one of them held her with her arms pinioned behind her back. "Calvin, I advise you to let me go," came Charles Wallace's voice from under Calvin. Calvin, his face screwed up with grim determination, did not relax his hold. The man with red eyes nodded at the three men, and they moved in on Calvin. At least it took three of them. Pried him loose and held him as Meg was being held. "Mrs. Wutsit," Meg called despairingly. "Oh, Mrs. Wutsit." But Mrs. Wutsit did not come. "Meg," Charles Wallace said. "Meg, just listen to me."
"Okay, I'm listening."
"We've been all wrong. I told you we haven't understood. We've been fighting our friend and father's friend. If father tells me he's our friend, maybe I'll believe it. Maybe. Unless he's got father under a spell or whatever it is, like you."
"This isn't a fairy tale, Meg. Spells indeed," Charles Wallace said.
"Meg, you've got to stop fighting and relax. Relax and be happy. Oh, Meg, if you'd just relax, you'd realize that all of our troubles are over. You don't understand what a wonderful place we've come to. You see, on this planet, everything is in perfect order because everybody has learned to relax, to give in, to submit. All you have to do is look quietly and steadily into the eyes of our good friend here, for he is our friend, dear sister, and he will take you as he has taken me."
"Take you in is right," Meg said. "You know you're not you. You know you'd never in your life call me dear sister."
"Shut up a minute, Meg," Calvin whispered to her. He looked up at the man with the red eyes.
"Okay, have your henchmen let us go and stop talking to us through Charles. We know it's you talking, and whatever's talking through you. Anyhow, we know you have Charles hypnotized."
"The most primitive way of putting it," the man with the red eyes murmured. He gestured slightly with one finger, and Meg and Calvin were released.
"Thanks," Calvin said wryly. "Now, if you're our friend, will you tell us who, or what, you are?"
"It's not necessary for you to know who I am. I'm the Prime Coordinator. That's all you need to know."
"But you're being spoken through, aren't you? Just like Charles Wallace? Are you hypnotized, too?"
"I told you that was too primitive a word, without the correct connotations."
"Is it you who are going to take us to Mr. Murray?"
"No. It's not necessary, nor is it possible for me to leave here. Charles Wallace will conduct you."
"Charles Wallace?"
"Yes."
"When?"
"Now." The man with the red eyes made a frightening grimace that passed for a smile. "Yes, I think it might as well be now."
Charles Wallace gave a slight jerk of his head, saying,
"Come," and then started to walk a strange, gliding, mechanical manner. Calvin followed him. Meg hesitated, looking from the man with the red eyes to Charles and Calvin. She wanted to reach out and grab Calvin's hand, but it seemed that ever since they had begun their journeying, she had been looking for a hand to hold, so she stuffed her fists into her pocket and walked along behind the two boys. "I've got to be brave," she said to herself.
"I will be."
They moved down a long, white, and seemingly endless corridor. Charles Wallace continued the jerky rhythm of his walk and did not once look back to see if they were with him. Suddenly, Meg broke into a run and caught up with Calvin.
"Cal," she said,
"listen, quick. Remember Mrs. Wutsit said your gift was communication and that was what she was giving you? We've been trying to fight Charles physically, and that isn't any good. Can't you try to communicate with him? Can't you try to get to him?"
"Golly day, you're right."
Calvin's face lit up with hope, and his eyes, which had been somber, regained their usual sparkle.
"I've been in such a swivet. It may not do any good, but at least I can try."
They quickened their pace until they were level with Charles Wallace. Calvin reached out for his arm, but Charles flung it off.
"Leave me alone," he snarled.
"I'm not going to hurt you, old sport," Calvin said. "I'm just trying to be friendly. Let's make it up, huh?"
"You mean you're coming around?" Charles Wallace asked.
"Sure," Calvin's voice was coaxing. We are reasonable people, after all. Just look at me for a minute.
Charlibus.
What a nickname. Charles Wallace stopped and turned slowly to look at Calvin with his cold, vacant eyes. Calvin looked back, and Meg could feel the intensity of his concentration. An enormous shudder shook Charles Wallace. For a brief flash, his eyes seemed to see. Then his whole body twirled wildly and went rigid. He started his marionette's walk.
"I should have known better," he said. "If you want to see Murray, you better come with me and not try any more hanky-panky."
"Is that what you call your father, Murray?" Calvin asked. Meg could see that he was angry and upset at his near success.
"Father? What is a father?" Charles Wallace intoned.
"Merely another misconception. If you feel the need of a father, then I would suggest that you that you turn to IT. IT again. Who is this IT? Meg asked. I'm starting to think that it might just be it, but it's like in all caps. So, if you hear this and you have an answer to that question, let me know. All in good time, Charles Wallace said. You're not ready for it yet. First of all, I will tell you something about this beautiful, enlightened planet of Kamazots. His voice took on the dry, pedantic tone of Mr. Jenkins. Perhaps you do not realize that on Kamazots we have conquered all illness, all deformity. We? Calvin interrupted. Charles continued as if he had not heard. And of course he hadn't, Meg thought. We let no one suffer. It is so much kinder to simply annihilate anyone who is ill. Nobody has weeks and weeks of runny noses and sore throats. Rather than endure such discomfort, they are simply put to sleep. You mean they're put to sleep while they have a cold, or that they're murdered? Calvin demanded. Murder is a most primitive word, Charles Wallace said. There is no such thing as murder on Kamazots. It takes care of such things. He moved jerkily to the wall of the corridor, stood still for a moment, and then raised his hand. The wall flickered, quivered, grew transparent. Charles Wallace walked through it and beckoned to Meg and Calvin, and they followed. They were in a small, square room from which radiated a dull, sulphurous light. There was something ominous to Meg in the very compactness of the room, as though the walls, the ceiling, and the floor might move together and crush anybody rash enough to enter. How did you do that? Calvin asked Charles. Do what? Make the wall open like that. I merely rearranged the atoms, Charles Wallace said loftily. You've studied atoms in school, haven't you? Sure, but then you know enough to know that matter isn't solid, don't you? That you, Calvin, consist mostly of empty space. That if all of the matter and you came together, you'd be the size of the head of a pin. That's plain scientific fact, isn't it? Yes, but... So I simply pushed the atoms aside and we walked through the space between them. Meg's stomach seemed to drop, and she realized that the square box in which they stood must have been an elevator, and that they had started to move upward with great speed. The yellow light lit up their faces, and the pale blue of Charles' eyes absorbed the yellow and turned green. Calvin licked his lips. Where are we going? Up, Charles continued his lecture. On Kamazots, we are all happy because we are all alike. Differences create problems. You know that, don't you, dear sister? No, Meg said. Oh, yes, you do. You've seen at home how true it is. You know that's the reason you're not happy at school. Because you're different. I'm different, and I'm happy, Calvin said. But you pretend that you aren't different. I'm different, and I like being different. Calvin's voice was unnaturally loud. Maybe I don't like being different, Meg said. But I don't want to be like anybody else, either. Charles Wallace raised his hand, and the motion of the square box ceased on one of the walls and seemed to disappear. Charles stepped out, Meg and Calvin following him. Calvin just barely making it before the wall came into being again, and they could no longer see where the opening had been. You wanted Calvin to get left behind, didn't you? Meg said. I'm merely trying to teach you to stay on your toes. I warn you, if I have any more trouble from either of you, I shall have you taken to it. As the word it fell from Charles' lips again, Meg felt as though she had been touched by something slimy and horrible. So what is this it? She asked. You might call it the boss. Then Charles Wallace giggled. A giggle that was the most sinister sound Meg had ever heard. It sometimes calls itself the happiest sadist. Meg spoke coldly to cover her fear. I don't know what you're talking about. That's S-A-D-I-S-T, not S-A-D-D-E-S-T, you know, Charles Wallace said, and giggled again. Lots of people don't pronounce it correctly. Well, I don't care, Meg said defiantly. I don't ever want to see it, and that's that. Charles Wallace's strange, monotonous tone ground against her ears. Meg, you're supposed to have some mind. Why do you think we have wars at home? Why do you think people get confused and unhappy? Because they all live their own separate individual lives. And I've been trying to explain to you in the simplest possible way that Kamazots individuals have been done away with. Kamazots is one mind. It's it. And that's why everybody's so happy and efficient. That's what the old witches like Mrs. What's-It don't want to have happen at home. She's not a witch, Meg interrupted.
No?
No, Calvin said. You know she's not. You know that's just their game, their way, maybe, of laughing in the dark. In the dark is correct, Charles continued. They want us to go on being confused instead of properly organized. Meg shook her head violently. No, she shouted. I know our world isn't perfect, Charles, but it's better than this. This isn't the only alternative. It can't be. Nobody suffers here, Charles intoned. Nobody is ever unhappy. But nobody's ever happy either, Meg said earnestly. Maybe if you aren't happy, unhappy sometimes, you don't know how to be happy. Calvin, I want to go home. We can't leave, Charles, Calvin told her. And we can't go before we found your father. You know that. But you're right, Meg. And Mrs. Witch is right. This is evil. Charles Wallace shook his head, and scorn and disapproval seemed to emanate from him. Come, we're wasting time. He moved rapidly down the corridor, but continued to speak. How dreadful is it that to be low individual organisms? His pace quickened from step to step, his short legs flashing so that Meg and Calvin almost had to run to keep up with him. Now see this, he said. He raised his hand, and suddenly they could see through one of the walls into a small room. In the room, a little boy was bouncing a ball. He was bouncing it in rhythm, and the walls of his little cell seemed to pulse with the rhythm of the ball. And each time the ball bounced, he screamed as though he were in pain. That's the little boy that we saw this afternoon, Calvin said sharply. The little boy who wasn't bouncing the ball like the others. Charles Wallace giggled again. Yes, every once in a while there's a little trouble with the cooperation, but it's easily taken care of. After today, he'll never have a desire to deviate again. Ah, here we go. He moved rapidly down the corridor again and held up his hand to make the wall transparent. They looked into another small room or cell. In the center of it was a large, round, transparent column, and inside of that column was a man. Father! Meg screamed. It's a pretty short chapter, but I also have strep throat, so I'm not going to push my luck and read more.
Thank you all so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this. Be kind to each other, hydrate, take naps, and get some rest. Bye, angels.